The sun goes down, the stars come out, and all that counts is here and now. My universe will never be the same. I'm glad you came.
Hello everybody, this is Buck with the RubberChickensBlog.com, and thank you for joining us for another edition of Buckshots. This will be the final installment in our review of every football season since 1987. Today we are going to look at 2012. And I say it's our final installment. We could come back and do this year after year after year. So maybe we'll be adding installments and replaying these every year. I don't know. We'll see. We'll see how long this run lasts. But when we last left our Gamecock football program, we had completed an 11-2 season, the first ever 11-win season in the history of South Carolina's football program. We had finished off with a Capital One Bowl win over Nebraska, convincing 30-13 win. During that season, we had beaten Georgia and Florida and Tennessee and Clemson and a lot of really good football teams. We had had one bad loss to Auburn and one loss to a pretty darn good Arkansas team. So expectations were once again high, as they typically were whenever we looked at the beginning of every season. When you're 0-0, it seems like the expectations are always pretty high. So we opened on a Thursday night at Vanderbilt, same place we had opened the 2008 season, which was a disastrous start to that season. Actually, I think that was the second game of the year, but we did play a Thursday night game at Vanderbilt back in 2008, which did not turn out very well for us. We were anticipating the return of Marcus Lattimore from an ACL injury, and he came back, and there was a lot of debate as he was running the football on that night on whether he looked like he had lost a step or maybe he wasn't quite 100%. I'm sure he probably wasn't 100% at this point. That was a pretty significant injury he suffered. He did rush for 23 times for 110 yards. He had a couple of touchdowns on this night. And I'm no doctor and I'm no football coach. Well, I guess a little bit of a football coach. I coach youth, but I don't know. I couldn't tell whether he lost a step or not. I thought he looked pretty darn good all night, but it was a struggle. This game was very much in doubt until the end. Lattimore had a 29-yard touchdown run to get things started in the first quarter. Adam Yates kicked a 20-yard field goal, and we were up 10-0 in the second. We were really handling the Vanderbilt offense. They were not able to move the ball, and then we had a breakdown by our safety. I think it was Bryson Williams made a break on a ball that Jordan Matthews caught, and just a bad angle. Matthews goes 78 yards for a touchdown, cuts the lead to 10-7, and the momentum seemed to really shift there. Vandy kicks a field goal. We go in at halftime tied at 10. They add another field goal in the third quarter to go up 13-10. Fortunately, we had Marcus Lattimore, and we had Connor Shaw. Even though Shaw was hurt, I believe it was late in the second quarter, hurt his shoulder. There was a lot of concern that it was a significant injury. I was worried that maybe it was a collarbone. If it was a collarbone, he would be gone for quite a while. Dylan Thompson relieved him for the time that he was out, and he went 3 and out in both of his series before Shaw came back in, and Dylan Thompson looked like he did not belong. He looked really bad out there. Connor Shaw toughed it out, was able to lead us to a touchdown in the fourth quarter to go up 17-13. We had a late defensive stop, which was aided by a great play by DJ Swearinger on the same Jordan Matthews. He might have got his hand in a little early on the play in question, but these referees, they're pretty good at what they do. I'm not going to question a call or a no call as close as that one was. So Carolina gets the ball back, get a crucial first down from Connor Shaw, and we're able to hold on 17-13. Good win on the road to start the season. You know, I think it probably left us with a lot of question marks. You always hope to go in and just handle Vanderbilt without any trouble when you know that you have the Floridas and Georgias of the world on your schedule coming up later. Just a side note, Vandy did go on to win 9 games in 2012, including a Music City Bowl win over North Carolina State. So I believe they lost to Northwestern the week after they lost to us. So it was a tough start, but they turned out to be a pretty solid football team. And it was funny, I remember a half-cocked interview with their Vanderbilt counterparts on SB Nation before that game. And the guy for Vanderbilt said 8 wins, 9 wins. You know, he was very optimistic, and I think we all kind of chuckled at that. But he was right. Vandy had a very, very nice season once they got going. The following week, it turns out Connor Shaw was a little too hurt to play against East Carolina, and I think we were really concerned because of the way Dylan Thompson had played in his 2 series against Vanderbilt. We were a little scared of what things were going to look like, but Steve Spurrier, he knows what he's doing with these quarterbacks, and he had Dylan Thompson throwing early and often and long. And Thompson was 21 of 37, 330 yards, 3 touchdowns, no interceptions. Had a long ball, 53-yarder to Demir Byrd, 51-yarder to Buster Anderson. And he looked fantastic, looked completely different than the guy that we had seen against Vanderbilt the week before. So a nice, easy win against East Carolina, a team that had been a thorn in our side back in the 90s, 48-10. Marcus Lattimore, 13 carries, 40 yards, so not a real big day from him. The next week was interesting. We played Alabama-Birmingham at home. We had moved up to number 8 in the country, and that was a frustrating game. UAB was kind of just chipping away at us on offense, and we weren't able to do a lot against their defense either. And DJ Swearinger play where he picked a ball out of the air when the UAB quarterback fumbled, takes it back all the way, kind of got things rolling for us. It was a 65-yard fumble return. Couldn't remember how early that had happened. That was actually our first touchdown after UAB had taken a 3-0 lead. We go on to lead 21-6 at the half and cruise in the second half to a 49-6 victory. Significant thing about that game is DJ Swearinger had a hit on a UAB receiver, a high hit, and he was suspended for the next game against Missouri. And Justice Cunningham had been hit by Vanderbilt's Andre Howell in the first week in a hit that looked as vicious, at least. And Mr. Howell had no further consequences other than a 15-yard penalty. So we were pretty concerned that we would be missing Swearinger against Missouri in that fifth week. We were 4-0. No, it was the fourth week. We were 3-0 heading into that game. And Missouri was a team that concerned us. James Franklin, the quarterback, not the head coach at Vanderbilt, but James Franklin, the quarterback, had a very nice year in 2012. Dual threat guy, a great defensive tackle for Missouri named Sheldon Richardson. And Missouri had played Georgia toe-to-toe, I believe it was the week before, game that went back and forth until Georgia's Jarvis Jones took that game over and Georgia beat Missouri at Missouri. So we figured it would be a battle. First quarter ended up tied with no score. And in the second quarter, Ace Sanders busted one of the great non-touchdown punt returns you will ever see. I can't remember if that happened, if that led to the first touchdown or the second, but regardless, it was a thing of beauty. We cruised to a 21-3 lead in the first half, and second half just kept adding points. Missouri scored a late touchdown to make the final score 31-10. Connor Shaw again with a big day, 20 completions, 21 attempts, 249 yards, and 2 touchdowns. He also had an 80-yard touchdown run called back that was just beautiful, and a questionable penalty in one of our offensive linemen there. Marcus Lattimore, 21 carries, 85 yards. And that set us up for a trip to Kentucky, a very bad Kentucky team. They were 1-3 at the time. And you figure you go into Kentucky and you cruise. I mean, we knew what had happened a couple of years before after the big Alabama win, and we just really laid an egg up there. And early on, it looked like we were going to lay another egg. We were moving the ball. We could not score points early. Kentucky had some just every break was going Kentucky's way in that first half, and they went into the half with a 17-7 lead. And at halftime, I remember thinking, it's just like the coaches and the players got together and said, okay, that's enough. And they just came out and physically dominated Kentucky in the second half. Second half started with a 30-yard pass from Connor Shaw to Demir Byrd to cut the lead to 17-14. Kenny Miles had a touchdown run. And heading into the fourth quarter, we were up 21-17 and scored three more times in the fourth quarter to win pretty comfortably 38-17 and run our record to 5-0. We would move up to number 6 in the country. I believe it was 6 in the country. Huge, huge showdown with Georgia on October the 6th. Georgia, of course, looking for revenge. We had beaten them 2 years in a row the previous year at their place in a wild one. Aaron Murray coming in for Georgia was having a great season, wound up having a fantastic season. And again, Georgia benefited from their schedule. Didn't play Alabama, didn't play LSU, didn't play Texas A&M from the West. So we needed this game pretty badly. They were 5th in the country. And we were 6th in the country, the highest combined ranking, obviously, between these two teams ever. And we just hammered them. And it was amazing at the time. And when you look back at it now, it's still amazing that this was only one of two games that Georgia lost all year. Ace Sanders' punt return, the early drives, the touchdown to Bruce Ellington, the early touchdown to Busta Anderson, up 21-0 at the end of the first quarter. And I'm just speechless. It's a game that I still have on my DVR, and I love to go back and watch. I'll tell you, the one play early on, maybe the second or third play of the game, Connor Shaw underthrows Demir Byrd, and Bakari Rambo is back there for Georgia, and Byrd just outfights him for the ball. I was talking to somebody recently. How does that game change if Demir Byrd doesn't come down with that catch? So a fantastic play by Byrd to help us build momentum. Just thrashed him. I mean, just tore him apart. Connor Shaw, only 6 of 10. He only threw 10 passes for 162 yards. Marcus Lattimore, 24 carries for 109 yards. Third straight game, over 100 against Georgia. D.L. Moore had a big play in the fourth quarter to set up a Connor Shaw touchdown, or maybe that was the one that set up the Marcus touchdown. Regardless, D.L. Moore had a big play in that game. I like to point out the big D.L. Moore plays, and the reason I do is because for a couple of years in a row, I chose him as the breakout player for us. I think I did in 2011 and 12, and he never quite did it. Georgia scores a trash touchdown with a minute 55. Man, I would have loved to have just shut them out. But the final score is 35-7. And we are starting to think big things are coming from this Gamecock squad. 6-0. We had moved up to number 3 in the country. And we had to make a trip to Baton Rouge, Louisiana, followed by a trip to Gainesville, Florida. And we figured we could drop one of those two games and still be in and still win the East. We felt like Florida would lose one. We already were a game up on Georgia. So the LSU game was one that if we lost, it wasn't the end of the world. And we went in there. We played them tough. We had a 7-3 lead at the half on a Ace Sanders 2-yard pass from Connor Shaw. It was a hard fought. I tell you, LSU was much tougher physically than I expected them to be. They pushed us around. They ran the ball on us. Zach Mettenberger hit passes whenever he needed to. And LSU slowly but surely wore us down in this game. And in the fourth quarter, down 14-10, South Carolina taking a 14-10 lead on a 2-yard Marcus Lattimore run. And it didn't feel like we should be leading this game. I'll be honest with you. It felt like we had been physically beaten. And in the fourth quarter, LSU just kept coming at us. A couple of field goals put them up 16-14, and then the backbreaker of Jeremy Hill busted a 50-yard touchdown run with about 5 minutes left to take them to put them up 23-14. We did fight back. Connor Shaw brought us down the field. We scored a touchdown late, about a minute 40 left, a short pass from Shaw. Shaw didn't have the greatest night, 19 of 34 for 177, two touchdowns and two interceptions, and one of them was really, really a bad, un-Connor Shaw-like play where he overthrew one of our guys. It was a bad interception that led to LSU points. So we couldn't do anything after that. Final score is 23-21. There was actually a lot of folks on Twitter calling for Dylan Thompson to come into this game because Shaw did look a little bit rattled, but stuck with Shaw, as we very well should have, and that one game buffer that we had, we dropped it at LSU. Lose that one 23-21 and dropped a little bit in the rankings. Head to Florida the following week, ranked number 7 in the country. We had dropped to 7. Florida was up to number 2, but Florida had not particularly been impressive. I don't really know what to say about this game. This was one of the games where I was coaching. I think my youth game started right about the same time this game did. I tried to tell everybody not to talk to me, didn't want to hear anything. I did hear that we were down 21-6 at the half, which sent me into a depression spiral while I was coaching our other team, our youth team, to victory. And so I didn't hear any scores after 21-6 at the half, so I thought maybe we can come back. You know, this is a game we got to win to stay in control of the East. And I came home and I watched it through the first half, and I thought, how are we losing this game 21-6? It was difficult to imagine. I mean, the game started horribly with the Connor Shaw fumble, and then we fumbled the ball away a couple of more times. But it was not like Florida statistically dominated us in this game. Total yards in this game, South Carolina 191, Florida 183. But 4 turnovers for the Gamecocks, 0 for the Gators. And they somehow won 44-11. I got to be honest with you. I fast-forwarded through the second half, and I just watched the score at the bottom of the screen. I watched it change and change and change, very much not in our favor. And I couldn't tell you what happened in that second half. Dylan Thompson did come in and play some in that game, 8 of 20 for 83 yards. He didn't look that good. Shaw didn't look very good and was kind of banged up. And I guess the folks who still are anti-Connor Shaw will point to the LSU game and the Florida game and say maybe he looked rattled or whatever. But he's won too many games, too many great games at home, too many tough games on the road. He's won for us to say that he is not our guy, folks. 17-3 as a starter. And a lot of people lose in Baton Rouge, and a lot of people lose in Gainesville, Florida. So not going to get too down on him about that. So tough loss drops us to 6-2, 4-2 in the conference. And once again, Georgia would run the table just like they did the previous year. So our SEC East hopes were pretty much gone. We play Tennessee the following week at home, Saturday, October 27th. And it's a day that South Carolina fans will not soon forget. And this was an early game. It was a noon game, and I had a game to coach at 2:00, so I had to leave my house right around 1:00. So I figured I could watch the first half, and I did see most of it. It was pretty sloppy most of the first half. We had our opportunities to pull away, and you know, we all remember this. Marcus Lattimore, 8:22 to go in the second quarter, has a 28-yard run where he just burst through the line, and he looked, you know, as good as at any point he did in his freshman or sophomore years. He looked like, wow. If anybody was questioning whether he was 100%, that run said Marcus Lattimore is 100%. He's back. He looked awesome. And South Carolina gets the ball back, and on Marcus Lattimore's very next carry, his foot is planted. One guy hits him high, one guy hits him low. And I'm watching the TV in our bedroom because I'm getting dressed and my son's getting dressed, and just kind of out of the corner of my eye, I'm watching the game, and I saw something very unnatural. And I got to tell you, I wrote about this in the blog the day afterwards, I think. I'd have an unhealthy fear of gruesome injuries like this and seeing them from Theismann all the way up to, you know, some of the more recent ones like Marcus's. And I couldn't watch it again. I knew something really bad had happened, and I knew the announcer said, you know, we're not going to show the replay again, and if you're squeamish, don't look at this. And I thought career over. I thought it was, you know, his foot was pointing the wrong way. I thought this is catastrophic. And it was a moment for Gamecock fans that was shocking, and it was sad, and it was it was just a terrible moment for all of us to know how hard Marcus Lattimore had worked to come back from that ACL, just to have an injury like this happen, where, you know, we eventually found out that he tore three ligaments, dislocated his knee, and had no idea what his future was going to be like. And we honestly still don't know what his future is going to be like. We know that he's with the San Francisco 49ers now, and he's had a miraculous comeback, but until he puts those pads on and some live hitting goes on again, we won't know. But it was I don't have the words to describe. It was a moment unlike any other that we have ever experienced as Gamecock fans, to see our hero, a guy who is, and you get tired of hearing cliches like, you know, as good a player he is, he's an even better person. And Marcus Lattimore is that guy. I mean, he wrote the book on being a good person and a hard worker and a great ambassador for the University of South Carolina. And to see something like that happen to him, to see the game that he loves taken away from him for a second year in a row, possibly millions of dollars taken away from him, it was tough. And I'm not going to lie to you, I got a little teary-eyed as they drove him off, and he was, you know, his shoulders were shaking as he had the towel over his head as he was being carted off, from just sobbing. And really messed up the rest of my day, I'll tell you that. Nothing like Marcus Lattimore's, but and of course there was the reaction of the two teams who came out to be with Marcus during this time. The Tennessee players are very classy. You guys know how I feel about the word classy, but I'll use it here. Classy move by those guys. All of the South Carolina team out there with him. But there was still a football game to be played, and I had to keep up with it via Twitter and, you know, whatever I could pick up on my iPhone while I was at Alpharetta North Park coaching football. And at one point, very, very late, one of the parents on our team had said, well, Tennessee scored. And this was on the drive, on the final drive that Tennessee had. And I said, wow, what a sucky day this is to have this thing happen to Marcus Lattimore, and then on top of that to lose to a Tennessee team that didn't have an SEC victory. But fortunately, that wasn't the case. I went back to Twitter and found out that Jadeveon Clowney, who had been held in check most of the day by Tiny Richardson, a great left tackle for Tennessee, had stripped Tyler Bray. He fumbled, and South Carolina got the ball and held on for a 38-35, a wild 38-35 victory. And after the game, another thing that really brought me down was the interview with Steve Spurrier. Whenever the sideline reporter asked him for a report on Lattimore, he said it didn't look good. And he knew one thing, that whatever field of life that Marcus Lattimore went into, he was going to do great at it. And that said to me, Spurrier was thinking, he might not ever play football again. But we've seen what's happened over the last few months, and he did well enough to get drafted by the San Francisco 49ers, and hopefully he's going to do well enough to get to touch that rock again next year in the NFL, and we're all pulling for him. So, had to regroup and face off against Arkansas 2 weeks later. Was the only game I attended last year, and it was a good one, a 38-20 victory, and maybe my favorite Clowney play of last year when Tyler Wilson of Arkansas faked a handoff and tried to, I don't know if it was a bootleg or exactly what it was, and Clowney just did basically a wrestling move, just swung around him and slung him down and then stood up and started barking at him. Was really great. This was also a tighter game probably than it should have been. We're up 21-10 at the half, and we scored on a long fourth down play to Bruce Ellington, 42-yard touchdown on fourth down to go up 21-10 right before the half. And that was one of those moments where I think Spurrier said, "All right, I'm fed up with this. We're gonna take over right here." And then another one of the great moments of the last few years, DJ Swearinger. Try to think of the sequence in which this happened. First, he got a 15-yard penalty for a horse collar tackle. Then he got a 15-yard penalty for a high hit on the next play. And then the play after that, he returns a Tyler Wilson interception 69 yards for a touchdown and throws the ball into the stands for another 15-yard penalty. So three plays, 45 yards in penalties for DJ Swearinger and a touchdown. So Gamecocks win that one, 38-20, move to 8-2. And then we get Wofford the next week, another just really torturous game. Much like the Citadel game the year before, you feel like if we can't do better against these guys, how in the world are we going to beat Clemson? Score was tied at 7-7 at the end of the second quarter, still tied at 7-7 at the end of the third quarter. Fortunately, something happened. I wasn't watching this one either because of my other coaching duties. Went up. I see that we went up 10-7, and then Ace Sanders' 8-yard pass from Connor Shaw to go up 17-7, and Akeem Augusti gets a 31-yard fumble return for a touchdown for the final margin of 21-7. So we're 9-2 heading into Death Valley. And Jadeveon Clowney had sat out the game against Wofford with a bad foot, I believe it was. Connor Shaw had really not been healthy all year, ever since that first game. So I don't recall us getting updates during the course of the week on Connor Shaw. I really don't. I kind of just assumed the whole time he was going to play against Clemson. And I guess about midday, on the day of the South Carolina-Clemson game, there were rumors that, well, maybe Shaw's not going to start. Maybe Shaw's not going to play. And me and T-Bone and G-Man were texting, well, it's been a nice run against Clemson. We got three in a row. If Dylan Thompson has to start this game on the road at Clemson, you know, Clemson's 10-1 coming into this game. They've had a good season, only losses to Florida State. We're thinking we're in trouble. I'll be honest with you. We're thinking we're in a lot of trouble. We all know what happened. Clemson scores early, and we come back and scored on a 13-yard pass from Thompson to Bruce Ellington to tie it at 7. Clemson immediately hits a 43-yard touchdown to DeAndre Hopkins, and we go in down at the half 14-10. And then a couple of great things happen. Number one, we get the ball first in the third quarter, and they always say the first possession of the third quarter in a close game really sets the tone. And we had a third down and long. I can't remember the exact distance. I know it was third and 15, 17, somewhere around there. A play where you shouldn't pick up a first down, and Dylan Thompson hits Ace Sanders across the middle. Ace breaks a tackle, makes a great move to get into the end zone, go up 17-14. We get a field goal later in the third quarter. We're up 20-14, which is nerve-wracking because you know a touchdown and an extra point beats you. Head to the fourth quarter. We're up 20-17, and a great drive and a great third down. Again, not sure the exact distance, 17 or 18 yards. Dylan Thompson does his best Connor Shaw imitation on a quarterback draw, picks up a first down. We score on a 6-yard touchdown pass to Bruce Ellington to go up 27-17. Jadeveon Clowney takes over from there with a beautiful sack of Taj Boyd. I think officially Clowney wound up with 4.5 sacks on the night, and we go into Clemson, win the football game 27-17. Dylan Thompson's the hero, 23 of 41, 310 yards, 3 touchdowns, and 1 interception. And just a magical night for the fourth win in a row over the Clemson Tigers. That takes us to the Outback Bowl against Michigan. And I have to admit, when I looked at Michigan, I was, you know, a little disappointed to be going to the Outback Bowl, because you're thinking the team that went to the SEC championship game, Georgia, well, we beat those guys. So for the second year in a row, we kind of felt like we should have been the ones in the SEC championship game, maybe getting a better bowl bid. But the Outback Bowl was there for the taking, and we took it. For the fourth time in 10 or 12 years, something like that. Excuse me. When I first looked at Michigan, I thought, not real interested in Michigan. They've got 4 losses. I think they had 4 losses coming into the Outback Bowl. But then I looked at them. They had some pretty impressive wins, and their losses were to Alabama in the first game of the year, where they were just overwhelmed. Notre Dame beat them by a touchdown. Notre Dame played in the national championship game. A really good Nebraska team that went to the Capital One Bowl beat them 23-9. And then a close loss to undefeated Ohio State 26-21 to end the regular season. So certainly was not going to be a cakewalk at this point. But we started off, got a quick early touchdown from Connor Shaw to Demir Byrd. It was good to see that 56-yard touchdown, gets things going. And we had a shot at some interceptions early. I know we had some balls go through our hands or just barely missed on some, but we felt like we were really in control early. Our main man, Ace Sanders, has a 63-yard beautiful punt return for a touchdown. We're up 14-3. Michigan keeps battling back, and they're down 21-13 at the half. And in the third quarter, they just keep battling away. And by the end of the third, they're up 22-21. And in the fourth quarter, we know the sequence. We've seen it a million times collectively. Michigan goes for it on fourth down in a punting situation. They measure to see if they got it. It is 3 or 4 inches short, and they are awarded a first down by the referee. And I still don't understand how the other referees or somebody, some common sense has to step in here and say, dude, look, it's like 3 or 4 inches short. Are you confused? Are you sure you don't want to look at this again? And then they say it's not reviewable. And they had to review the spot based on the previous play, which they upheld. And it's just like, how did this happen? And I'm thinking, as they're lining up for this next play, how did this happen? And then the hit. It was like all things happen for a reason. And that ridiculous first down that was given to Michigan happened for this exact reason. And I got into it a little bit with one of the Michigan blogs, and I think I've gotten into it with some Clemson folks who say that the Jadeveon Clowney hit was not a great play. And I'm like, look, if you want to argue that it's not a great play, like Lynn Swann's juggling catch in the 76 Super Bowl, 75 or 76 Super Bowl wasn't a great play, or, you know, Flutie to Phelan wasn't, it's not a great play compared to that. Look, Michigan screwed up their blocking scheme. Taylor Lewan, who had done a good job against Clowney for most of the day, he blocked down the tight end, blocked out. That left a hole for Clowney to run through. He used every bit of his explosiveness to hit Vincent Smith. But tell me you have ever seen a helmet fly that far in your life on a football hit. That was something you'd see in any given Sunday in a movie, something that they would make up that would never happen. But for someone to say it wasn't a great play is absolutely ridiculous. It's one of the it's going to be one of the iconic plays in the history of college football going forward. And it has made Jadeveon Clowney famous. It has made the University of South Carolina tons of money and given us tons of recognition. And it has been fun to watch. So the very next play after the hit was a pass to Ace Sanders. He makes a great catch in the back of the end zone to go up. South Carolina goes up 27-22. So Michigan drives back down the field and score on a 17-yard pass from Devin Gardner to Jeremy Gallen. By the way, Clowney had another big hit on Denard Robinson on that series where it looked like it was almost as hard a hit as Vincent Smith, but Robinson's helmet didn't come off, so it didn't get nearly the attention. But it was a big hit. Not quite the impact of the Smith hit. Well, not nearly the impact of the Smith hit. So Michigan's up 28-27. South Carolina gets the ball back. One last-ditch attempt. And the G-Man chronicled this in a great blog post the following week, and I will link to that instead of going through it play by play. But just some big-time plays by Shaw, by Busta Anderson, by Ace Sanders, by Demir Byrd, and then Dylan Thompson, in relief of an injured Connor Shaw, hits Bruce Ellington with a 32-yard touchdown pass with 11 seconds left to put South Carolina up 33-28. One of the great finishes that we will ever see in South Carolina football. Ranks right up there with Brandon Bennett over the top against Georgia. And I can't think of too many other ones that have ended like this. Mike Rath to Troy Williamson against Kentucky, but both of those teams that I've mentioned were not nearly as good as this one, and the situations were not nearly as dramatic. It wasn't a bowl game, an 11-win season wasn't on the line in those years. And we did finish 11-2, second consecutive top 10 finish, and that is where we stand today as we go into the 2013 season. We have been a top 10 ranked program now, heading into our third year. It has been quite a run since 1987. And for you folks that have a lot of history in Gamecock football prior to 1987, I know you appreciate it more than I do. And I know there's been a lot of suffering over the years, and it's all been brought back to the surface for me anyway as I've gone through this series. And I really shouldn't say that. There have been moments of suffering, but there have been some great moments too that have been a lot of fun to recall, and it's been a lot of fun to dig up some old names that I had forgotten about throughout the late 80s and the 90s and the 2000s. You see these names, and I was like, wow, I can't believe I've forgotten about that guy. And I wish I could do 2 hours on every season so I could recognize some of these folks, but I know I don't have time for that, and I'm sure you don't have time to listen to me do that. But I do thank all you guys for listening. This has been a lot of fun for me, just bringing back some great memories, some mediocre memories, and some not so good memories. But it's lent a lot of perspective to me, and I've preached perspective over the last couple of years, but I don't think it. I think they were just words until I started going through this season by season, seeing where we were and all the disappointment that we seem to end most seasons with, and to know that we have a couple of bowl victories in a row and a couple of 11-win seasons is just, we're at a place in South Carolina football where we are just plowing new ground every day, and I hope we continue to plow some new ground in 2013. We'll get started on Thursday night, and I am looking forward to it, as I know all you folks are. During this series, we had Marty Simpson come on. I had Connor Tapp from the Half Cocked Show help out with one show. T-Bone filled in for a couple of years, and I'd like to thank all those folks who contributed. I'd like to thank all of you for listening. This has been great fun for me, and I hope it has been fun for you. And as I look at my clock, I'm going on 40 minutes on this one, which I think will be the record for the longest buck shots of all time. No, I take that back. Marty Simpson. Me and Marty talked for a long time. Having a guest on is a little different than just me sitting here yapping. So for buck shots where I just sit here and yap, this is the longest one ever. Thanks again so much for listening. I really, really appreciate it. We at the Rubber Chickens blog appreciate it. And let's go get them Gamecocks. Let's beat those Tar Heels Thursday night and get things started right. Talk to you folks soon.
Like the sky fell on me, and I decided you look well on me. So let's go somewhere no one else can see you and me. Turn the lights out now, now I'll take you by the hand. Hand you another drink, drink it if you can. Can you spend a little time? Time is slipping away. From us, so stay, stay with me. I can make you glad you came. The sun goes down, the stars come out, and all that counts is here and now. My universe will never be the same. I'm glad you came. I'm glad you came. Cast a spell on me, you hit me like the sky fell on me, and I decided you look well on me, so let's go somewhere no one else can see you and me. Turn the lights out now, now I'll take you by the hand, hand you another drink, drink it if you can. Can you spend a little time? Time is slipping away, away from us, so stay, stay with me. Make you glad you came. The sun goes down, the stars come out, and all that counts is here and now. My universe will never be the same. I'm glad you came. I'm glad you came. Come out, and all that counts is here and now. My universe will never be the same. I'm glad you came. I'm glad you came.